Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor, brought to you by Heart and Soul Broadcasting Services. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today I'm in conversation with Anita Posh, a Bitcoin advocate and the executive director of Bitcoin for Fairness. Enjoy this insightful and thought-provoking conversation. Anita Posh, welcome to In Conversation with Trevor.
Thank you very much, Trevor. I'm very honored to be here today, really.
I'm always fascinated by how I meet people who end up sitting where you are sitting. So we met after you posted this tweet on Twitter. Let's share it with our viewers. And then a friend of mine, Stafford Massey, alerted me to your tweet and said, Trevor, hey, get in touch with Anita and see if you can talk to her. Just briefly tell us what it is that you did before you made that tweet.
Okay, yeah. So we were traveling to the Eastern Highlands, and I realized it's a very remote area, but still a lot of people are living there, agriculture and natural beauty. And I thought, oh, I want to try to send Bitcoin from here to South Africa, because this is something that you, like, standing there in this remote area, you can't really do that from Zimbabwe to South Africa. And so I sent some Bitcoin from my phone to Bitcoin Ekasi, which is a project in South Africa that's also doing
in
Bitcoin.
In Cape Town,
I know they are in Mossel Bay.
Mossel Bay, okay.
We can talk about them later, because it's a very interesting project. And they had it in seconds. And so Bitcoin is borderless, permissionless, and it cost me nothing actually to send the money. And I could send an amount in Bitcoin which is lower than $5, which you can't do with most or even all financial services you have around here. Mm. So Bitcoin really enables you to send money almost for free anywhere in the world, which is great. Even more when you live in countries where you are like have financial oppression and problems with banks and things like that. Mm. And so that's what we did, and it was successful. And
When you tweeted, some people responded, because you said you were the first one to send Bitcoin from Zim. And somebody quickly said, no, my gardener actually sends Bitcoin to Zim. I didn't know whether to take them seriously or not. What's your response?
I believe that they are serious. Okay. And of course, I know that people in Zimbabwe know about Bitcoin. And there are a lot of people who already have used it or have been using it. What I think was new was I sent it over the so-called Lightning Network, which enables micropayments to almost zero fees, and I sent it from my own Bitcoin node, meaning I did more than just have it on a wallet and send it somewhere. So, and I think that was the first of its kind. But of course, I know that a lot of Zimbabweans already have been using Bitcoin, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that aspect of the Bitcoiners. Is that what we call them?
Yes, you can call them.
Bitcoiners in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
There's also Bitcoin mining in Zimbabwe. Let's talk in the first instance about that community. In your view, how big is that community?
I can say it from my own experience. So I came here the first time in 2020, mm-hmm. and did my first talk about Bitcoin and open blockchain technology, and tried to foster a sort of a community here, which is specialized on Bitcoin only and education, because there are so many scams around. Mm-hmm. And so when I got back in early 22, like in March this year, I met with some people who were already into Bitcoin. Someone came from Bulawayo to Harare to visit my talk. And then we started a WhatsApp group. And it has grown from zero to 250 people now.
Wow.
And there's no trading, no scams. So as soon as someone is joining the group and saying, you can get rich fast, they are kicked out. Yeah. And so now we have or had some meetups in Harare. There will be ones in Bulawayo. There was one in Gweru. So it's growing. And I also, from talks to people who are using Bitcoin, I know that with the pandemic, there was a huge increase in the use of digital assets like Bitcoin to send and receive money because people couldn't go out. They couldn't go to banks. I heard that in the year 2021, one trader alone traded $7 million US dollars in value of like Bitcoin and USDT.
In Zimbabwe?
In Zimbabwe.
Wow.
On the ground. Yeah. Peer to peer. Yeah.
You also, as I was reading around, you're talking about that said because of the controls and that kind of stuff, people actually sometimes go around carrying cash to do a Bitcoin transaction in Zimbabwe. Am I right? Am I correct?
Yes.
Do you want to correct me and tell
us
exactly
what's happening? No, you're completely right. As far as I know, there is a sort of a banking ban on Bitcoin. So banks are not allowed to interact with it, but people are allowed. And it's an alternative money. It's like exchanging goods with each other, you know? And so since there are, on the one hand, there's this ban of the Central Bank of Zimbabwe, and on the other hand, you have the international sanctions. So international exchanges are not allowed to do business in Zimbabwe. And so there are not many exchanges where people here can obtain or get Bitcoin, buy Bitcoin. But so most of these trades happen in person. So you meet with someone you trust, and this person gives you US dollars for your Bitcoin or the other way around. And I actually find this is very beautiful. It might sound to some people, oh, but we are excluded from the Bitcoin system. No, you're not. The great thing about that is basically that you have no restrictions. You don't need an ID to use Bitcoin. You don't need a bank account. And I think that is basically the thing which empowers people and gives them also privacy because no one can take your Bitcoin away from you. But you can freeze a bank account.
So a policeman can't arrest you and take a Bitcoin away from you?
No, I mean, at gunpoint, yes. Or if they say, I throw you to jail, you give me your private keys to a Bitcoin, of course they can obtain it. But in general, on a level of, like, say, civilized conversations with other people, or I mean, nobody can steal your Bitcoin, no. Because it's like cash in your pocket. It's only digital. Yeah.
So I think on that point, let's help people at home and people like me. I'm sure you can tell from the questions I'm asking that I'm totally ignorant. I have no idea about what I'm talking about. Help us break it down. What is Bitcoin?
Okay, I don't think that you have no idea, but I can break it down.
Break it down as quickly as you can so that people at home understand what it is that we're talking about.
Yes. Bitcoin is basically digital cash. You can imagine Bitcoin is not a coin. It's just something virtual. And you have access to this virtual value through your wallet on your phone with your private key, the so-called seed. That's a cryptographic method of enabling you to access data. Bitcoin is basically data that has a value on it. And so you can send it globally, borderlessly, permissionless. And you can use it peer-to-peer. That means you don't need a bank, you don't need to register, you don't have any transaction limits, you have low fees, and there's no cooperation behind.
You don't need to fill a form?
No, nothing. You just need to either, if you have internet and a smartphone, you download a so-called open source self-custodial wallet, like the Blue Wallet or the Moon Wallet or Wallet of Satoshi, and then you can start. So if you have relatives in the diaspora, for instance, they can obtain Bitcoin there and send it to you. And in 3 minutes, you have the money.
But I can't go into a shop and buy.
Not yet. That's the thing I'm trying to foster and encourage people to use Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. Because most Bitcoin, influencers or so, they are speaking about the store of value and the speculation effect, how you can invest in Bitcoin. Yeah, I'm speaking about using it as a means of payment that enables you to send fast, almost for free, and directly to your relative without them having to go to Western Union, pay 30% fees, and then maybe being robbed on the way.
But help me, Anita. I'm slow here. Mm. You really need to be slow with me. What's the point of me sending my relative Bitcoin if they can't go to a shop and use Bitcoin to buy? Help me there.
Yes. So for instance, they could go to a website which is called Bitrefill and buy top up their phones with it. So you can top up your Econet phone or your how are the others called here? Econet
and NetOne. Telone. Yeah.
Telone. Mm. Exactly. So you could send, you can directly basically send the telephone minutes to someone in Zimbabwe over Bitcoin.
Using Bitcoin.
Yes. Or I know from people who live in South Africa and have relatives in Malawi, and they are sending these mobile minutes to their mother in Malawi, and mm-hmm. she sells the mobile minutes to her neighbors, and that's the way how she gets the money. Mm-hmm. If you're in South Africa or other countries, like in the UK, you can buy so-called Bitcoin vouchers. Mm-hmm. Atsteko is the website. So you can basically buy their Bitcoin, but you only need to send the voucher code to your relative in Zimbabwe, and they can then obtain the Bitcoin and then go into one of these trusted WhatsApp groups and ask for people who would like to exchange those Bitcoin to US dollars.
Mm. What's the connection? Again, you really need to slow down here. What's the connection between Bitcoin and blockchain?
So,
is there a connection?
Yes, there is a connection, but many people believe that blockchain is the groundbreaking technology, which is, in my opinion, not true to my knowledge. So the blockchain is a database only in Bitcoin that is storing all transactions that have been done since 2009. Bitcoin blockchain mm-hmm. collects all the transactions in the right timely order. That's why Satoshi Nakamoto called it a time chain. He never spoke, he or they, because we don't know who it is, never spoke of blockchain. They only said time chain. And the main innovation that Satoshi Nakamoto made was there were a lot of attempts to build something like digital money already in the 90s. So it started with cryptography, a decentralized ledger, and on and on and on. But all those people and experiments couldn't solve the problem of double spending. Mm. What does this mean? So when you have a PDF, a digital file, and you send it to someone else, you can say that's the original. But you can send 100 copies of the PDF to someone else as well. So you're cheating them. And Satoshi Nakamoto solved this problem with the blockchain, with this database, that there is can only ever be one digital Bitcoin be sent or spent. So you can't cheat. You can't copy your Bitcoin and say, now I have double the Bitcoin. And that's what they solved with the time chain or blockchain technology and the mining. And from that stems this idea that blockchain is in fact the technology that it will change or disrupt the internet. I agree in general that cryptography and decentralization will disrupt the internet, but I have a problem with the blockchain word.
What's the problem?
A lot of nothingness.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Because all those blockchains or cryptocurrencies or different projects on top of blockchains work so differently. Mm. There are different mechanisms how mining works, like proof of stake, proof of work, and they all fall under blockchain. It's a big, it doesn't say anything actually. Mm. And so I have a little bit of problem with the term, but I believe in the disruption that this will bring in the internet. Mm. Yeah.
So let's talk about the disruption.
Yeah.
You've brought in the subject.
Yeah.
And this book basically says this disruption is going to be huge.
Yeah.
And this disruption is basically going to torpedo the internet. And I agree with it in terms of the negatives associated with the internet, the you know, fake stuff, copying stuff, hate, and all that kind of stuff, and that blockchain, the term that you don't like, is going to come in and disrupt that. That this book actually says we're living through the end of the Google times are actually here. The internet as we know it is faulty and it's going to be disrupted and torpedoed. Talk to me about that.
Yes, yes, of course. So let's go back a little bit in the history of the internet. You know, like I came onto the internet in 1997. I had my first email at home and internet connection, and I was like, wow, blown away, you know. And I thought, wow, this will change the world. And I had the same feeling in 2017 when I rediscovered Bitcoin and I understood that this will also change the world. And so at the beginning, you had this internet or web 1.0. Yeah, that was the phase where we had websites where you just could interact with a website in reading it. You could maybe send an email to it, but it was basically just sending and pushing news or information. And then around 2004, 5, 6, the so-called Web 2.0 came along. And it was the rise of social media where we suddenly could comment. The blogging was coming up back then. You suddenly could comment and write down your opinion on certain pieces. And from that, Facebook and Twitter and all these companies, which are centralized companies on top of an open internet. So basically, the in the early 90s, people were basically enjoying the internet and saying, this will be the revolution. It opens communication for everyone. But then, because of financial reasons, business model reasons, these giants came along. And they had a lot of money to put in from the beginning. They could suffer a lot of losses until they reached this massive importance scale they have today and are the biggest companies ever. The problem with them is they are completely centralized. They dictate what we see. They push ads upon us all the time. It's their model. Their model is to get as much data from us as possible. And then in the early 90s, there were the so-called cypherpunks. People like Adam Back, for instance, who is one of the inventors of Hashcash, which is used by Satoshi Nakamoto in Bitcoin, was an early privacy advocate and cryptographer in these years. The USA wanted to forbid, or they basically banned cryptography. But cryptography is only mathematics. And it's also freedom of speech in cryptography. And so they basically won this war, and the government in the US said, yes, encryption of data is a part of the First Amendment of the US. So a basic right. So in came these big companies, and the cypherpunks always said the goal of technology should be to honor the privacy of people as much as possible and just use this amount of code or software or data from the people that is really, really needed to function, to make this software work. And that is the basic idea behind Bitcoin. You have to think about that, because those cypherpunks were those who wanted to create digital money and also save our privacy. And that is where Bitcoin comes in. And the Web3, what we see now, and that's what meant with this book, is the total decentralization of the internet, making it possible. We have websites like Keet.io, for instance. With Keet, you can send huge amounts of data peer-to-peer. It's like Bitcoin. You send it peer-to-peer. You don't need these companies anymore. And the greatest thing about that, about cryptography and the private keys you hold to your own data, which is also what you do with Bitcoin, is you can restrict, like on a granular basis, who is allowed to see your data and what are they allowed to do with it. So the disruption that the Bitcoin technology and cryptography is bringing is going from centralization, pushing ads on you, extorting you basically,
And we say essentially saying you what you're saying is that that age is coming to an end.
It's being stretched.
And I really recommend this book to people who want to engage in that conversation. And also, let's play a video from Stafford Massey on the importance of blockchain and the fact that blockchain is here to stay. Let's play that video.
The energy spent on Bitcoin mining is the most effective, efficient, and valuable form of energy utilization of anything on the planet today.
Wow.
People don't understand Bitcoin. So when they talk about, like, we see papers being written about, like, greenhouse gases and emissions. A Bitcoin server farm, a farm where machines are sitting and mining the ledger with proof of work as the engine, which I'll explain in a second, takes a lot of capacity and a lot of electricity. But what's the result? And first of all, that entity, there's no emissions. It's a zero emission point of presence. There's no emissions. So when someone's agreeing, what are you talking about? First of all. Second of all, it is, if you take a look at the activity that's happening, people putting value in and what that value results in, the net result relative to the energy consumption, there's nothing on the planet that compares to it. There's no industry. Take a look at healthcare. Take a look at food. Take a look at, there is no industry in the world where energy goes in and the net resultant is what you get with Bitcoin. It's not the same. So mining.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin works in a decentralized manner. So what we have in the network, we have nodes and then we have miners. So nodes are verifiers and miners are the engines that when a transaction happens, puts up their hand to say, I want to process the transaction. Okay, so I'm going to try and make it as simple as possible.
Sure.
I want to pay you. I want to send you Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'm in Zimbabwe.
You're in Zimbabwe. So I want to send you 500,000 Satoshis. Mm-hmm. Okay, So I go, send Trevor this. I want to pay Trevor this. What happens is all the Bitcoin miners in the world, when I send that instruction, put up their hands and go, I want to mine it. I want to mine it. So they take the entire ledger. And the ledger is about 4 gig big now. I think it may be bigger, but the last time I looked, it's about 4 gigs. It's the entire Bitcoin ledger. All the transactions that happened from 2009 up until today, it's about 4 gig big. I may be wrong. Maybe 400 gig. I may be wrong in that. But the point is then everyone puts up their hand and they say, I want to mine it. I want to mine it. And then they try to put as much processing power behind it to do the mining, which is the mathematical instruction to add that record onto the entire ledger. And that energy that goes behind the processing to do that, the first person that does it right, puts up their hand, processes the ledger, it gets given to the nodes to say, here's the new ledger now because it's been given to Trevor, and this is the new ledger for Bitcoin in the world. That, putting up my hand,
is the mining. So your personal, professional journey is interesting to me because it essentially brings out your disaffection, your unhappiness with the internet. Having worked for 20 years, 22 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Building websites and that kind of stuff. And then you decided that, no, I don't want to do this. Talk to us about that shift. Why you suddenly came to a point of saying, what I've been doing for 20 years is not right. I don't want to do this. Talk to me, about that.
I wouldn't say that it wasn't right, but I came to a point where I thought there must be something else. You know, I studied, actually, I'm an urban planner, so I always was interested in a good relationship, good economies on the ground, neighborhoods, you know, that they are, like, have a good standing and are healthy and these kinds of things. And I also was always, like, interested in the people's economy. Occupy Wall Street in 2008, 2009.
Fairness, justice.
Exactly.
The small man.
Yeah, exactly. So fairness is something that is very important to me. And that's why I called my initiative Bitcoin for Fairness, because I realized then after 22 years doing e-commerce projects, like, you know, in Europe selling stuff that I thought people don't really need. And this consumerism that we are in actually globally to sustain this economic system that we have at the moment, which is built on credit. And so as money is built on credit, we have to have ever-growing growth. And this system brings us down. That's why we have climate problems and these kinds of things, or why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, you know. It's because money and property is in the hands of a few people. And coming back to my history, like then in 2017, I thought there must be something else, or it was 2016. And then I heard about Bitcoin again.
I'm going to hold you there, because the you outline three very important things for me, which two you've touched on. You were unhappy with surveillance capitalism.
Yes.
That's huge.
I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Consumerism.
Yes.
We have the Chinese website. What is it called?
Alibaba.
Alibaba. That is good. That day where people go shopping. Alibaba causes people to shop 20, 30 billion US dollars in one day.
Yeah.
Consumerism. Surveillance capitalism, the centralized nature of the internet. Those are the things that grated with you. Those are the things that you are unhappy with.
Yes.
Please carry on.
Yes, the centralized internet, and that is what we were talking about before, like this push of ads to you, the stealing of your data, making money with it, you know. I wanted to contribute to a bigger solution that will make all of that useless and go into a new form of economy, which is a greater economy, a people's internet economy. Meaning, for instance, that with Bitcoin, you can now earn Bitcoin directly through your work as a podcaster, for instance. Or when you create content, you don't need a payment tool that takes another 5-10% from your money. You don't need to ask for permission. You just set up a so-called Bitcoin Lightning address, and people from all over the world can send you money, and you don't have to ask anyone for it. And that is how I believe that the greater economy will rise on top of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, where you can send money directly and without the bank. And this is going to change the world in so many aspects, because it frees you also from that you have to sell ads to make money as a YouTuber or as a podcaster.
You know why Anita said you disagreed with this? Because essentially, this is what you've been doing all your life. Okay? So what you've been doing for 20 years, you woke up and say, no, there's got to be something else. That shift is huge, Anita. That's what I'm trying to say to you. What's your pushback?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I was a big fan of Facebook at the beginning. I mean, at the beginning I said I dislike it, but then I used it because everyone was using it. And I realized I have to use it if I want to market my services, for instance. So I taught people on how to use social media, business people on how to use social media. But then I realized, okay, now with Bitcoin, I really have the chance to do what I'm in a way maybe supposed to do.
I'm going to put you on the spot, and I want to do that so that we help people out there get where you're coming from. So you taught business people to use social media.
Mm-hmm.
You're now teaching business people to do what?
To use Bitcoin.
Not social media. Exactly. That's my point. It's that shift that I want to bring out.
Yes.
And where it is coming from.
Oh, it's a huge shift, because all I know about the financial system, about how money is created, about economy and these things, I all learned that from 2017 on because I was interested in Bitcoin and I wanted to find out, can I trust it? How does it work? What is the technology behind? What is the philosophy behind? And so it's a huge shift, and it's empowering people on another level. Before, with social media, I thought about empowering people through free communication, and that's also empowering. And what is now empowering people is the internet of money, that you can send value like an email. You can send value on social media.
That's a hugely important point. I just want us to zero in on that. You say Bitcoin might be our only tool to secure the human right to privacy and freedom of transaction. One. Two, it's a medium of liberation for billions of people and a defense mechanism for privacy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing to say. Unpack that for us.
One of the human rights in the Declaration of Human Rights is freedom of speech. So if you send money to, let's say, a political party or someone else, then you express your opinion with sending money. And in today's system, this opinion can be cut down. So you can, if you send money to a political party that some government doesn't like, they will freeze your accounts. Happened, for instance, in Nigeria with the Nigerian Feminist Coalition. They were supporting the end SARS protests in 2019, I think. And the Central Bank of Nigeria froze their bank account. They couldn't get any donations anymore. And they reminded themselves of, there's this new technology, it's called Bitcoin. Let's install a BTC pay server where we can get donations from abroad again. And they got it again, and they were able to support the demonstrators again.
We've seen that in Ukraine, too. Ukraine has used Bitcoin technology to fundraise to fight the war in a big way.
Exactly. And there were also a lot of people were able to flee the country with their Bitcoin possessions or cryptocurrency possessions, which you usually can't do because the ATMs are either empty or the banks are closed in such a crisis like a war and you can't get money out of the bank anymore. But if you have the keys to your Bitcoin, you can just go across the country, you can migrate, you can flee and
is
take your money
Bitcoin
with you.
Bitcoin key like a password?
Yeah, it's something, it's a sort of password.
Okay.
So it's called the seed and usually it's about 12 English words in a certain order. You need to memorize, not memorize,
you
need
write
to
them down
write
somewhere.
Them down on a sheet of paper, not on your computer or so, because that can be hacked. And these 12 words will always give you access to the money, because the money is not in your wallet on your phone, it's on the Bitcoin blockchain in the database. So with that seed, you can basically access the value you own on the Bitcoin blockchain. It's a little bit like if you have your password for Gmail, your emails are not on your computer, they are on Gmail server, but you can access this with the password.
So let's go to the next point.
Yes.
So you're saying it's a medium of liberation for billions of people and a defense mechanism for privacy.
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
So around 2 billion of people worldwide are without bank accounts because they either are too poor and not interesting for the banks, they are too far away from banks, or they don't have an ID. So these 2 billion people are excluded from our financial system. They can't use money to store value or to send it or to build a company around it or things like that. And with Bitcoin being permissionless, everyone can access it. And at the moment, like there are 9 African countries where you don't even need the internet to use Bitcoin. There's a system called Machankura 8333. You can send Bitcoin like mobile money.
Using USSD.
Using USSD, exactly, yes. And I think this is huge. And people don't get it yet, yeah? Because it's also, we are still very at the beginning of these Bitcoin technologies, you know? This is all coming. And so it includes also these people because they just need a feature phone and a, let's say, Tel1 or Econet phone minutes line, yeah? And they can use Bitcoin. And so also
Do you know which these 9 countries are, the 9 African countries? Would you be able to name
it's
South, them?
South Africa, Zambia, Kenya.
Help us here with how to install a Bitcoin secure wallet on your smartphone.
Okay, so...
Can you do that?
Yes, of course.
Can you do that now?
Yes.
How long will it take?
5 minutes.
Minutes to do that. But you've got a video that explains that. But you can explain it to us now, can you?
Yes, so there's one thing. Fantastic. I wanted to say. We have this small folder on our website. It's bffbtc.org.
Okay, we'll find it.
ORG, yeah. Flyer. Mm-hmm. And everyone can download it, basically, for free, of course. And it explains the basic principles of Bitcoin. And it also has a sort of a guide how to install a wallet on your phone. So you basically, if you have mobile data and internet, you can download a wallet like the Blue Wallet, for instance, or Moon Wallet, which is free. in the Play Store on your phone. And then when you open it up, it also, it immediately asks you to write down the seed words. You have to keep them secure. And from there, you can start. You can go to receive.
But after this, you can teach me how to do that.
Of course.
And I'll have a Bitcoin wallet.
Yes.
Awesome stuff. And we will play that video to that you did for our viewers to get a sense of how they can play around with their phone and install Bitcoin. now about your passion for human rights.
Yeah, I mean, I think this one is a result of my grandfather and mother's education about the Second World War and how fast powers can change, and your political friend is suddenly your enemy, and which implication that has on your life. So that's one thing. And the other thing, I mean, I'm a lesbian, you know. So, and when I grew up 20 years ago, it wasn't possible for us to marry or to have children with a female partner or so. So, and, you know, every day I see accounts of where gay people are killed or lesbians are hanged in the Iran and things like that. So up until this point today, this is affecting me, of course, because it's not, we don't do any harm to anyone, you know, and it's a great unfairness, and I really suffer from that. And so I think I understand the unfairnessness, so how is this word, that is occurring to many, many other people on other accounts, you know.
Marginalized communities. Minorities.
Females, women worldwide, we still earn less. We don't have the same rights. There are still 75 countries in the world that don't allow women to inherit or own property. This is also something that Bitcoin could solve, because you only need a phone and nobody needs to know that you have that.
And yet, when we're starting off air, you were saying that you have observed that the number of women using Bitcoin is very low. And we were sharing with you that our viewers out there, 85% of our viewers are men and 15% are women. We're quite trying to understand, why is this? Why is the use and understanding of Bitcoin so low amongst women? Do you have any insights on that?
Yeah, I think it's basically stereotypes that we learn when we grow up. You know, a girl has to play nice and keep the family together, and technology and all those interests are more like seen in the boys. And this is something that is perpetuated until we are older. And so I think Bitcoin is a technology, for instance, it has to do with mathematics, cryptography, finances, and money, and the internet, and computers, and these are all areas in which women are underrepresented. And I always wanted to change that, being a woman, standing there and saying, hey, you can do that too, yeah? And it will help you, it will liberate you. And so that's the reason why I believe that there are less women. They are just not motivated from outside to do it. They are motivated to care for the family and be not loud and yeah.
So you talk about the inspiration for your passion for human rights coming from your parents and their experience. You are a lesbian. Tell us about where you were born. And where you were educated? Where were you born?
Yeah, I was born in Austria, 52 years ago, and so I went to school there. I went to university there and spent basically my whole life there. But I always had an interest—I don't know why—but in the African continent, maybe also because one of my aunts, she was traveling Africa like in the 70s, and I was very impressed with that. And I saw that also then Bitcoin really has the biggest use case on the African continent or the South American continent, where the problems with money are the highest, and also where we have the highest number of authoritarian leaderships. You know, we have globally 54% of all people have to suffer or live under authoritarian rulers. And when I realized that Bitcoin can basically topple dictators, I knew that this is elementary for us, for human rights, for us as people, because that doesn't come from me. That comes from a human rights activist from Eritrea. And she says, if we all were to start using Bitcoin, which we hold in self-custody, the governments could not steal the money from us anymore. So we would dry them out. They can't extract the value from us anymore. And I find this is really changing, life-changing. And if people were to get that, I'm here to basically bring that message. You know.
And why Zimbabwe? You've been to Zimbabwe, you've been to Zambia, and you were saying you're going to share with us what ECASI is doing. Talk about those projects in the first instance. What you're doing in Zimbabwe, what you've been doing in Zambia, and the ECASI project. I looked at them on Twitter. Very interesting young people doing interesting things in Mosul Bay.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So what I and my friends at Bitcoin for Fairness are trying to do is bring Bitcoin knowledge to these places here, to share, like bring also infrastructure. So like Zambia and Bitcoin ECASI, I brought a so-called a device, which is a Bitcoin and Lightning full node, which makes the Zambians and the Bitcoin ECASI people really a part of the Bitcoin network. You know, it's coming from the US and from Europe. It's a little bit like the internet. People used it there at the beginning, and it trickled down to African nations later, and it's the same here now. And so with bringing these devices, we enable the people there to have access to this groundbreaking technology. And so what I also do is we're doing workshops and fostering the setup of meetups, so that I'm not coming here to tell people what to do. When they ask me how to use this technology safely, I tell them and I try to educate the educators so that people here themselves can build their own communities. And because I only think that is sustainable. It's not sustainable to come here, throw money around and then go again, you know. And so in Zambia, we did a meetup. We did a workshop for journalists. We had 10 journalists coming to a day-long workshop, and we told them what Bitcoin is, how to identify scams. We also downloaded a Bitcoin wallet and did some transactions with each other, so they now know how to use it. And then there is the Bitcoin ECASI project, which started 1.5 years ago. And it's basically a surf school owner who said, I also want to contribute here. And he started 10 years ago to invite the children from the ECASI, the township, in Mosul Bay, to learn surfing for free. Because he says, and that's true, it's also a school of life, yeah, because you have to have discipline and perseverance and things like that. And then when he discovered Bitcoin, he thought, that would be great, actually, for the people here as a tool to empower themselves financially and not being dependent on the rand anymore. So he started to share his Bitcoin knowledge with his coaches. So the surf coaches are young men from the township, and they now have this Bitcoin knowledge. And then they have a teacher there. They do like school education and also teach the children about Bitcoin. And the thing is now that the surf school is paying the surf guides in Bitcoin.
Wow.
And they themselves, in their own neighborhood, onboarded 10 of 17 shops, these small informal shops, to accept Bitcoin. So the guides can go there and spend their money there on daily goods.
Wow.
And now even it's possible to buy vouchers for Pick and Pay and for Checkers with Bitcoin. Mm. So they can use the Bitcoin they earn and go to Pick and Pay and shop groceries. Yes. Yeah.
The I suppose as you're talking in terms of financial inclusion, it's got a huge impact there.
Definitely. That's the hugest impact I can think of, because you don't need an ID. You don't need to be already rich. You don't need to have any status. You can use it any gender, any color of people. You know, everyone can use it. And so for me, it's the most inclusive tool. And the reason why that is also the reason that Satoshi Nakamoto is not around anymore. And Bitcoin is not a company. So nobody, no state actor can go and say, close down that tool because you are a company and I force you to close it down. And this can't happen with Bitcoin. And that is what it's meant with it's unstoppable. Even if governments say Bitcoin is illegal here, people will use it. This is happening in Nigeria, for instance. In Nigeria, it's not illegal to use Bitcoin, but the banks are also advised to not use it. So it's a banking ban, basically. But the adoption,
people are going on.
The adoption is going woo, you know, because everybody who is using it for the first time will see how much it basically empowers themselves, what they can do with it. And so I believe.
Let's use me as an example. You're going to teach me how to download a wallet. Where do I get that money from? Where will I get the Bitcoin?
For instance.
I'm going to earn it.
Yeah, you can set up a so-called Lightning address. It looks like an email address, but it's basically an email address where one can send you Bitcoin to. It's very easy to do.
So I can do some work on the internet and stuff and somebody pays me?
Yes, exactly. And that's what a lot of people already are doing in Zimbabwe. I know of Zimbabweans who have been working online and earning Bitcoin for their work from abroad for years now. So that's basically, and this is also something where we are very at the beginning. It's coming up. You can.
So guys out there, by the end of the show, I'm going to have a Bitcoin. What do you call it?
A Lightning address.
Lightning address and a wallet. You can send me money
when
I do share the address. The other thing that you shared with me, which I found fascinating, is that there are people in Zimbabwe right now who are doing Bitcoin mining. It's happening?
It's happening, yes.
Is it a big community or is it one or two people?
No,
I mean, we don't have to disclose the names
because
we don't want to endanger them. But that's an interesting thing.
So the thing that happened was when I was here in March, I was like, sharing what we are doing on Twitter and other media. And I connected two guys with each other. One is in the UK diaspora and another one is a Bitcoiner. And this UK guy wanted to start Bitcoin mining on his farm here in Zimbabwe, where he has solar energy. And this other guy, which I interconnected with him, he said, I'm going to donate a few old mining machines. These are specialized computers that mine Bitcoin. So they are part of the security of Bitcoin, of the network in a way. So this guy really sent those machines. And the Zimbabwean guy here in the country uses his solar energy on the farm now to mine Bitcoin, basically for free because he has that solar power in excess. So excess energy, it's for free. So I know he said he's mining about $20 a day value. Which is huge, actually.
Really?
For this small
computer.
Yeah, it's only like 6 computers, you know. So it's an experiment, but it goes to show that you can do it when you have hydropower, for instance, or solar power. And there's one thing I want to say to that. It empowers not only people who have small-scale farms and excess energy. Bitcoin brings self-sovereignty to the individual by the fact that you hold the keys to your money. You are the sole owner of your money if you do it right, not on an exchange. And on the other hand, it enables self-sovereignty for whole countries and nation states. That's what I also told the Zambian journalists. If countries here, which have excess hydropower, were to start Bitcoin mining, because you only need the machines and the knowledge, but then you have this cheap electricity that you in most cases also can't send far across. Yeah, so you can use it there. Then you can basically mine your way into a Bitcoin reserve. So you change your natural resource and make basically mine Bitcoin from it. It's like gold, but only you mining new Bitcoin
using a computer and using energy.
Exactly, that hydro. You have. Yes, exactly. Green energy. And then you have that, and if you hold it for 10 to 20 years, I can't say it will happen because then I would be a scammer.
Yeah.
But I think the price will go up as it did from 0 to 20,000 now, you know. So you are not at the mercy of others then. So you create a reserve of Bitcoin. You don't have to indebt yourself again with other countries, which I think is a devil's circle, you know. These countries here, they always get new credit from the IMF or from the Chinese or from the Americans. And then basically those countries own African countries, you know.
Imagine getting free access to the Newsday, the Standard, the Zimbabwe Independent, and the Weekly Digest for a full month. Well, you can. And all you need to do is download the Newsday e-reader app on Google Play Store or scan the Newsday QR code in any of the AMH print publications and start enjoying the quality content. Usasaririrewe, fambane time, fambane chokwadi, fambane e-paper.
So,
Anita, I asked my friend who is in Johannesburg, South Africa, Stafford Massey, at the Gibbs Business School, if Bitcoin could solve Zimbabwe's economic problems, and this is what he had to say.
Bitcoin could do things for Zimbabwe that's extraordinary. It really, really could. It could allow for new financial instrumentation in a way that you can't even imagine. I think if someone had to ask me, like, what was Bitcoin built for? The formal economy, like you and I that have bank accounts and cards? No, it was built, but Bitcoin built for people that have cash and that cash infrastructure. You know, no, I think like even cash is quite intricate and the structure is built around it on a social basis. The way, a Shabin works where I grew up, the way a Stockfall works, it's very structured. I think Bitcoin is not for the informal economy or informal economy. It's for this, like what I call the third economy. Mm. And it's a view that I don't have right now, but it's imagine giving a guy 2 hours outside of Shenzhen that he's got a mobile phone, he's got no access to fiat currency, mafia state, etc. So he's like, what could he do with this? What could that guy, you know, an hour outside of Harare do with this? That's going to be interesting. He'll create new financial instrumentation. So I would encourage leadership in Zimbabwe to take a look at it the same way El Salvador's looked at it. I think make it legal tender. I think regulate it in a friendly way, create a tax framework around it. Be careful of the crazy stuff. I think focus on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Bitcoin and Lightning, and the wallets associated with that. I mean, you could switch on cross-border payments instantaneously. You could create businesses that have inflows. And you could create a whole new taxation paradigm for the government. I mean, it could solve Zimbabwe's capital problem.
So what do you think? Can Bitcoin solve Zimbabwe's? You've come here, you looked at our monetary situation, you looked at the controls, you looked at the shortage of currency and everything else. Can Bitcoin solve our problems?
It definitely can help solve individuals' problems. And on a nation state level, I mean, you had or have had a lot of problems with inflation. We know that. And on the other hand, it's also like new currencies are coming up here and there, and then suddenly your US dollar account is exchanged into a 1-to-1 Zimbabwean dollar, and they tell you it will stay the same value, but now we're what, 1-to-750 or something, and so this will happen over and over again. And so Bitcoin is basically a neutral money, since there no one can decide or change the maximum of amount of Bitcoin that will be in existence, because that is what monetary inflation is. The government is printing money to extract value from the people, and then I guess they exchange it to US dollars and buy themselves something, you know. A Bitcoin also
can't
do this with your Bitcoin, because you have the password, the seed. It's like cash, you know. The other thing is corruption. Bitcoin is private and open or transparent at the same time, which sounds crazy, but it works like that. So you don't associate your name or email or ID with Bitcoin, it's private because it's pseudonymous. You can spend it and nobody knows that it's coming from you. But on the other hand, if you want to take governments into you want to audit budgets, for instance, you can do that with the Bitcoin blockchain very easily, because you see where the money is going. You can follow the money, so they can't run away with it anymore. the diverse governments stealing from the people. And so I believe it can, in a way, solve a lot of people's problems here with money. Mm-hmm. Also, I hope that many countries around the world will see that Bitcoin is basically an internet protocol that enables exchange of value. And as such, it can't be influenced by governments or people who have lots of money.
It can't be hacked.
No, it can't be hacked. It can't be, the code can't be changed without a global consensus where everyone who is using the network would agree on it. So if there ever is disagreement about the future code of Bitcoin, this has happened like in 2017, for instance, then you suddenly see a so-called hard fork, meaning the code is not the same anymore. You then had Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin. And one of the guys who is cited here, Greg Wright, he's one of those Bitcoin SV founders. Mm-hmm. He says he is Satoshi Nakamoto, but he can't prove it. So, so there is this possibility if someone were to want to change the code, they can do it. But I think then it will split again. So you have two versions of the Bitcoin software, basically. Mm. So I think that it's the best money that could be used as a global standard of base money for all countries because it can't be influenced. Because now we have the hegemony of the US dollar. Everyone wants the US dollar. Everyone has to use it because it's still connected to the petrol industry. And therefore it has its power. But this hegemony is also crumbling. And how nice would it be if all countries would agree on a neutral money standard that is Bitcoin and not the US dollar, the yen or the ruble and all these currency wars? Because we have currency wars. Every country is trying to have more exports. They change the value of the money. And also with Bitcoin, central banks and bankers and politicians could not influence the monetary, protocol or the monetary standard anymore. They can't inflate Bitcoin. They can't make more of it.
I've got 1,000 questions you're talking right now, but most of them are coming from ignorance. Let's go to something which I absolutely love, which is books. Let's talk books. And I want us to talk books with you slightly differently because you have translated 2 volumes of Andreas Antonopoulos' book called The Internet of Money. Mm-hmm. Why did you do that?
So I translated these 2 books. That was after I already wrote the first version of my own book. And Andreas Antonopoulos is a fantastic educator, and he influenced almost all my ideas about Bitcoin and its philosophy, and also this humanitarian interest in it. You know, and he's a great educator, and he did a lot of talks earlier than 2017 into 2020. And he's a great teacher. And the Internet of Money books are explaining Bitcoin on a level where you understand the big basic implications it has on
is
technology.
Is it a technical book?
No, it's a book for beginners, like for people who are interested in it, just to grasp the idea and the scale of these changes. So it's really a very great
fantastic
book.
We hope people
Internet
out
of
there
Money.
Grab it and read. You have written a book yourself. It's called Learn Bitcoin or N Bitcoin. Talk to us roughly about this book. You know, a minute?
Yes, sure. So it's a book for beginners. Mm-hmm. And what I believe is great with that book is you don't only have the theory, like the explanation, what is Bitcoin? Why do we need it? What is it? Which problems is it solving? What is Bitcoin mining? And all these basic questions about the technology and Bitcoin money itself, You also have a second part in the book where you, I give recommendations for wallets, how you safely secure your private key, your seeds, that you don't lose it and always have access to your money. And I also speak about resources and possibilities to earn Bitcoin. Mm. So that's why it's called Learn, Earn Bitcoin.
Your book has caused a bit of controversy because its cover is a black raised clenched fist shaped in the map of Africa. Hmm. Why did you choose that symbol?
I got to know that symbol in Bitcoin Ekasi because it's basically their logo. And I thought it's very suitable for this book because I believe in Bitcoin as empowerment. And I believe that Bitcoin is a tool that can smallen the gap between the global south and the north, you know, the wealth gap. Mm. The earlier you people here, sorry that I say it that way, start learning and using Bitcoin, the faster you adopt it and the faster you will overtake the people in Europe or in the US who still say, I don't see the need, I don't see the use case, because there we have banks that are quite okay working. Mm. Now we also have 10% inflation in Austria, you know? And so I really believe that Bitcoin has here the best or makes the most sense
potential
for people. The biggest potential to make you, let's say, more independent. And also, I mean, this symbol stands for empowerment, in my opinion. I thought, should I really use it? Because it's Africa, but it's also valid for South America, you know. But then I thought, yeah, my work at the moment is in African countries, and it's a sign of solidarity, actually.
Okay. Any books that you would recommend to our book-loving audience out there? Any books to help them understand Bitcoin, and particularly the connection between human rights and Bitcoin? If there are any books that you could recommend, please, for our book-loving viewers?
Yes, so as we said, the Internet of Money series by Andreas Antonopoulos. If you're more into the technical ideas and the software behind, then it's also Mastering Bitcoin by Andreas Antonopoulos for developers. And then I would say the Little Bitcoin book is also on a very, how shall I say, understandable...
Who wrote that book?
Alena Vranova, Alex Gladstein, and two other people.
Okay.
Alex Gladstein is also a human rights activist, and so they speak from that perspective.
Yeah.
I also speak about that in my book, and I recently made a keynote about how Bitcoin is enforcing human rights.
Mm. So. Anita, this is a conversation that could take another year. Or more, and because this, we are, I get a sense that we are at that space where the disruption of the internet, blockchain, Bitcoin is happening. I'm not an expert, but I sense that there's something happening. And this book here, which I'm recommending to those people who are interested in reading and deciding whether we are at that space, you know, when we're excited about emails in 1919, when was it?
5-7.
Thereabout. And we, you know, people thought, oh, it wouldn't last. Here we are. And this guy has written quite a number of books. He's an investor. He's somebody who's quite wealthy and has been very influential within the tech space. And his views are very interesting. We don't have to agree with him, but it's pretty thought-provoking. Anita, thank you so much for sparing the time to come and share your insights here. I'm sure this episode is going to start a lot of conversations about around Bitcoin, the Bitcoin mining, connection to human rights is going to be exciting. Some people are going to be upset that we're talking about Bitcoin helping topple governments, but such is the nature of freedom of expression, isn't it?
Exactly.
Anita, thank you so much for coming through and spending time with us. Allow me to turn over now, Anita, to our viewers who are all over the world who follow us. Remember, we are out on YouTube every Monday at 7 a.m. Central African time to ensure that you don't miss out on any of these quality conversations, such as one I've had with Anita here. Please click onto this button and subscribe. Remember to like, remember to share. We also have developed podcasts, and we sit on all major podcast platforms for your listening pleasure. We have created a website for you to scroll, look, rather explore the kind of content that we've got on our website. Visit our website and see the content that we've, quality content that we've built over the years. Thank you for your support. Until next time, cheers to you all.